On the fifth day of September 2011 in San Diego, we are reading from the Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Beginning chapter 4, Transcendental Knowledge, text 1. Sri Bhagavan Vacha, Imam Vivasvate Yogam, Proktavan Hamavyayam. Vivasvan manave praha.
Vivasvan manave praha.
Manurikshvaka ve bravit. Shri Bhagavan vacha. Imam vivasvate yogam. Proktavan hamavyayam. Vivasvan manave praha. Manurikshvaka ve bravit. Shri Bhagavan vacha. Imam vivasvate yogam.
Imam vivasvate yogam.
Proktavan hamavyayam.
Proktavan hamavyayam.
Vivasvan manave praha.
Vivasvan manave praha.
Manurikshvaka ve bravit.
Manurikshvaka ve bravit.
Sri Bhagavan vacha.
Sri Bhagavan vacha.
Imam vivasvate yogam.
Imam vivasvate yogam.
Proktavan hamavyayam.
Proktavan hamavyayam. Vivasvan manave praha. Manurikshvaka ve bravit. Alec.
Shri Bhagavan vacha.
Imam vivasvate yogam. Proktavan hamavyayam. Vivasvan manave praha. Manurikshvaka ve bravit. John. Shri Bhagavan vacha.
Imam
vivasvate yogam. Proktavan hamavyayam. Vivasvan manave praha. Manurikshvaka ve bravit. Shri Bhagavan vacha, the Supreme Personality of God, had said, Imam this vivasvate unto the sun god, Yogam, the science of one's relationship to the Supreme. Proktavan, instructed, Aham, I, Abhyayam, imperishable. Vivasvan, Vivasvan, the sun god's name. Manave, unto the father of mankind, of the name Vivasvata. Praha, told, Manu, the father of mankind. Ikshvakave, unto King Ikshvaku, of Brabit, said. The personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna, said, I instructed this imperishable science of yoga to the sun god Vivasvan, and Vivasvan instructed it to Manu, the father of mankind, and Manu in turn instructed it to Ikshvaku. Purport. Herein we find the history of the Bhagavad Gita traced from a remote time when it was delivered to the royal order of all planets, beginning from the sun planet. The kings of all planets are especially meant for the protection of the inhabitants, and therefore the royal order should understand the science of the Bhagavad Gita in order to be able to rule the citizens and protect them from material bondage to lust. Human life is meant for cultivation of spiritual knowledge in eternal relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And the executive heads of all states and all planets are obliged to impart this lesson to the citizens by education, culture, and devotion. In other words, the executive heads of all states are intended to spread the science of Krishna consciousness so that the people may take advantage of this great science and pursue a successful path utilizing the opportunity of the human form of life. In this millennium, the sun god is known as Vivasvan, the king of the sun, which is the origin of all planets within the solar system. In the Brahma Samhita 552, it is stated, Yat chakshur esha sabita sakalag brahanam raja samasta sudamurtir ashesha teja yas yagya brahmati sambhita kala chakro govindam adi purusham tamaham bhajami. Let me worship, what Brahma said, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Govinda or Krishna, who is the original person and under whose order the sun, which is the king of all planets, is assuming immense power and heat. The sun represents the eye of the Lord and traverses its orbit in obedience to his order. The sun is the king of the planets, and the sun god, at present of the name Vivaswan, rules the sun planet, which is controlling all other planets by supplying heat and light. He is rotating under the order of Krishna, and Lord Krishna originally made Vivaswan his first disciple to understand the science of the Bhagavad Gita. The Gita is not, therefore, a speculative treatise for the insignificant mundane scholar, but is a standard book of knowledge coming down from a time immemorial. In the Mahabharata, Shantiparva 348-51-52, we can trace out the history of the Gita as follows. Treta yugada chatato vivasvan vanavedada manush chaloka vrityartam sudha yekshvaka vedada ikshvakuna chakatito vyapya lokan labastitaha. In the beginning of the millennium known as Treta Yuga, this science of the relationship with the Supreme was delivered by Vivaswan to Manu. Manu, being the father of mankind, gave it to his son, Maharaj Ikshvaku, the king of this earth planet and the forefather of the Raghu dynasty, in which Lord Ramachandra appeared. Therefore, the Bhagavad Gita existed in human society from the time of Maharaj Ikshvaku. Close quote. At the present moment, we have just passed through 5,000 years of the Kali Yuga, which lasts 432,000 years. Before this, there was the Dwapara Yuga, 800,000 years, and before that, there was Treta Yuga, 1,200,000 years. Thus, some 2,005,000 years ago, Manu spoke the Bhagavad Gita to his disciple and son, Maharaj Ikshvaku, the king of this planet Earth. The age of the current Manu is calculated to last some 305,300,000 years, of which 120,400,000 have passed. Accepting that before the birth of Manu, the Gita was spoken by the Lord to his disciple, the sun god Vivaswan, a rough estimate is that the Gita was spoken at least 120,400,000 years ago, and in human society it has been extant for 2 million years. It was re-spoken by the Lord again to Arjuna about 5,000 years ago. That is the rough estimate of the history of the Gita, according to the Gita itself, and according to the version of the speaker, Lord Shri Krishna. It was spoken to the sun god Vivaswan because he is also a Kshatriya and is the father of all Kshatriyas who are descendants of the sun god or the Surya Vamsha Kshatriyas. Because the Bhagavad Gita is as good as the Vedas, being spoken by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, this knowledge is apaurusheya, superhuman. Since the Vedic instructions are accepted as they are without human interpretation, the Gita must therefore be accepted without mundane interpretation. The mundane wranglers may speculate on the Gita in their own ways, but that is not the Bhagavad Gita as it is. Therefore, the Bhagavad Gita has to be accepted as it is from the disciplic succession, and it is described herein that the Lord spoke to the sun god spoke to his son Manu, and Manu spoke to his son Ikshvaku. Om Jnana Timarandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshu Unmidatam Mena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisance unto him and to all members of Sri Parampara. So, this verse begins with the word this. Now, the question is, this yoga, what is that yoga? So that yoga refers to the previous verse, the last verse of the previous chapter, in which Arjuna is instructed by Krishna to steady his mind. Let's see what he said. Thus knowing oneself to be transcendental to the material senses, mind, and intelligence, O Mariyanda Arjuna, one should steady the mind by deliberate spiritual intelligence, or Krishna consciousness, and thus by spiritual strength conquer this insatiable enemy known as lust. So the whole mission of yoga is to transcend the limits of the physical body, the limits of the material energy. And the main way in which we are entangled in that material energy is through this material desire, or lust, as we studied in previous verses. This material desire has infected the mind, the senses, and the body, and the intelligence. And in this way, it keeps us bound to this world and covers our actual knowledge. So we need a process by which we can extract ourselves or disentangle ourselves from this bondage of material desire. And that process is Krishna consciousness, as explained in the last translation here. And it is a process of, you know, steadying the mind by deliberate intelligence. That's the process of yoga. But how to do that, that's going to be described in subsequent chapters. And so this is a kind of yoga. The control of the senses, control of the mind, is what yoga is all about, really. We have bhakti yoga also involves that. Without first controlling the senses and engaging them in Krishna's service, there's no question of practicing bhakti yoga. So Krishna now is going to give a little history of this yoga, bhakti yoga, that he spoke originally millions and millions of years ago. The yoga is actually an eternal process. Krishna spoke it millions of years ago to the sun god, but he also spoke it earlier than that. But he's giving a history of how it came down to the earth specifically, because that's where we are. So this is a little history here. So the first thing is to the sun god. Now the sun, each of the planets, there's nothing impersonal. Everything is under the control of a person. We cannot see that in our present state. But there's nowhere in any of this creation that is not under the control of some person, ultimately the Supreme Person. But the Supreme Person has his representatives, expansions in the forms of the devas. And one of the main devas in each universe is the sun god. Each universe has its own sun. So our particular sun god is named Vivasvan. He's actually an expansion of Narayan. It's called Surya Narayan. So the point being made here is that it's that Krishna always wants the leaders of society to have this science. Because if you can imagine if we had, you know, the mayor, the governor, the president, were all devotees, how influential that would be for the whole society, how wonderful it would be that they would engage in policies in line with the Bhagavad Gita and propagate Krishna consciousness. You know, that's a dream. But at some point in history, that was true. We read about it in the Bhagavatam of great kings like Yudhishthira, Parikit, Prithu, and others, Bharata, who indeed enforced the laws of Bhagavad Gita, the Manu Samhita, and propagated Krishna consciousness. And when there was some deviation, they would punish the wrongdoers. That's the principle, that's the principal duty of the Kshatriyas, to protect the people. That the very name Kshatriya means to protect from harm. So they also have to know the principles. That's why they have to be under the guidance of the Brahmins. When the Kshatriyas neglect to take the instruction from proper Brahmins, genuine Brahmins, then the whole society becomes discordant and people suffer like anything. So Krishna being always concerned about the welfare of the praja, of the people, even in this material world, he periodically reinstitutes the science of God by teaching the leaders of society. So the leader was Vivasvan. Vivasvan spoke it to his son, who was Vaivasvata Manu, who was our present Manu. And Manu in turn spoke it to his son, the father of mankind. Well, I don't know if he was this, if it mentioned that Ikshvaku was the son of Manu. But he spoke it to Manu, and Manu instructed to Ikshvaku. So this was a long time ago. And this is a part of the history. And one thing to get from this is that this is not something new. This is an eternal science. When, for instance, the first thing you learn in Bhagavad Gita is the science of the soul, the difference between the body and the spirit, and the different qualities, right? The spirit is eternal, the body is temporary. That's the first lesson. Now, when is that knowledge going to be obsolete? Never. As long as there's a material world, there are going to be material bodies with souls in them, right? And if they're in the human form, one can understand this science. So it'll always be pertinent that Krishna instructs about transmigration of the soul and the different principles of reincarnation, karma, all of these different things. It's obviously an eternal science. It never becomes obsolete. But you find all, you know, material knowledge becomes obsolete very quickly. Right? You find the history of medicine, for instance, if you read about what they believed in the 13th century, you know, about disease, you know, they didn't even know about germs until, when was it, 17th, 18th century. And therefore, they couldn't defend against the bubonic plague, you know, it just ravaged Europe at one point, right? They didn't know to wash their hands, you know, after passing or anything. Or there's a lot of, you know, lack of bathing, if you read the history. You know, bathing once a month was a big deal. You know, obviously there's going to be... They were ignorant. There's a mode of ignorance, you know. So then, you know, all the principles are thrown out. They finally discover something. Science, you know, medical science progresses. But it's still going on. It's still going on. Things are becoming obsolete, and, you know. But this knowledge is never going to be obsolete. You know, the Karma Yoga, the chapter we just read. When is it that people or any living entities in this material world are not bound by the forces of lust or material desire? You know, when will it not be necessary to control the senses and purify them in order to transcend birth and death? You can see it's an eternal science. So that, but it becomes lost in society, as we'll read in the next verse, due to the force of time. This science, this knowledge keeps getting covered, just like Krishna says, in our own mind, it gets covered because of material desire. So in society as a whole, when it's too conducted by the modes of passion and ignorance, this is completely forgotten. It's completely forgotten. And therefore Krishna comes, or he sends his emissary to renew it. So, you know, there's many important instructions in this purport. Srila Prabhupada quotes from the Brahma Samhita about the sun. You know, the sun is said to be the eye of the Lord. You know, there's one way of thinking of God is kind of a preliminary stance called the first step in God realization of understanding everything, you know, as part of God's external body. You know, this is a way of sacralizing our vision in a way. You know, instead of just seeing the sun, you know, you see, oh, this is the eye of God, you know, and the moon is the other eye, you know, the wind blowing is his breathing, and the rivers are his veins, and the mountains are the bones and things, you know. So that reminds you that everything is related to the Supreme, you know, and it changes your relationship to this earth. You know, if you have any regard for the sacred, for the Lord, then you'll be you'll do minimal damage to the earth in living. You see, it's kind of a natural ecology, environmental consciousness. You know, rather than raping the earth, you know, destroying the environment. You think it's impersonal. You don't care. You know, this is the external body of your beloved Lord. You know. So everything is sacred in that sense, you see? So this is why it's said here, you know, Raja, the king of all the planets is the sun. You know, they're all revolving the sun, and the sun seems to be coming and revolving around the earth. So yasyagya, it is moving on the order of God. Everything is under the order of Krishna. That's what this is, this verse from the Brahma Samhita. Says. It's not a speculative treatise. It was spoken, the same thing was spoken earlier, it would be spoken forever. Trace out the history. So then Prabhupada gives some calculation here. And this will puzzle Arjuna, as we see in a few. He says, because he's taking the role of kind of a conditioned soul, he knows Krishna as a contemporary. So, you know, if you tell me, Carlos, you spoke something a million years ago to someone, so how can that be? You're only 22 years old. So that's what Arjuna says. So Krishna then enlightens him on his own appearance. First comes the appearance of the Gita, and then Krishna's own appearance. You know, very important verses. You know, Prabhupada quoted this Janma Karma Chamei Divyam verse number 9, practically more than any other verse. If you just understand the birth and activities of Krishna, their transcendental nature, then you go back to Godhead. You know, but you have to understand in truth. So that'll be coming. All right, any questions on this? One very important word here, that this knowledge is a paurusheya. It's superhuman. In our present state, how can we get knowledge? Well, we know. We see things. We hear from other souls. We read books. We have teachers, you know. But if all of these sources of knowledge, if they're also infected with the three modes of nature, they're limited, then we can't know anything beyond that. Right? We can't know anything about the transcendence about the absolute truth beyond the limits of the of these three modes of nature, or the limits of our mind and senses, right? So we need a source of knowledge that is apaurusheya. The simple meaning is superhuman. Purusha means human, means not, or super in this case. So that superhuman source is Krishna. And it's coming through us through the Bhagavad Gita. He's also in our hearts, but we can't access that right now. We're too impure. But out of his mercy, he appears externally as the Shastra, or scripture, and the great souls who are actually transcendental. So in this instance, we have both together. We have the words of Srila Prabhupada, who's also quoting other great souls like Baladev Vidyabhushan, explaining the words of Krishna, which is, you know, a Apaurusheya knowledge in its purity, you know, in the original. So here we have it, you know. And if we accept it, if we try with our limited intelligence to understand, then Krishna gives us the intelligence from within to really understand, provided that we're willing to take it to heart and act on the knowledge. So that's the importance of this Apaurusheya. Now, as Prabhupada makes clear here and in other many places in the Bhagavad Gita, this Bhagavad Gita knowledge can also be distorted. It can be presented by non-devotees. It can be presented by those who have an axe to grind, who want to support some other kind of philosophy with the Bhagavad Gita, because the Bhagavad Gita is so popular, right? Just like when they have an advertisement, they get somebody who's famous or well-known or well-liked to endorse this product, you know, because he has credibility amongst the masses of people. Okay, if so-and-so likes this shave cream, then I'll buy it too, you know. He must know, or I like him, or whatever, right? So Bhagavad Gita is so popular, especially in India. It's we're known all over the world now. So people want to support their own philosophy with the Bhagavad Gita. So Mahatma Gandhi, you know, he tried to support the principle of absolute nonviolence on the Bhagavad Gita, but you can't do that. It's very difficult. It's on the battlefield, after all, and the conclusion is that Arjun fights the battle. So I don't know how he was able to do that, you know. But he was so famous and so influential that he tried to do that. Another fellow I remember many years ago, before I met the devotees, there was a Bhagavad Gita, but it only went up to the sixth chapter. They figured that sixth chapter was the culmination because they were into Ashtanga Yoga. And he said, here's the Bhagavad Gita, look, the conclusion is the sixth chapter. You see, the nefarious business. Because there's no copyright on the Gita. I mean, anyone can quote these verses, you see what I'm saying? Bhagavad Gita as it is has a copyright, BBT, but that includes all the purports. So therefore, there's a great need for the Bhagavad Gita as it is, meaning given by the devotee whom Krishna inspires from within and who enlightens from within as no one else. And Krishna will also mention that in the third verse here, why Arjuna is a recipient of the Gita, not because he's a great scholar, you know, but because he's a devotee and friend of Krishna. And therefore he can understand. So this is very encouraging to us, because I'm not a great scholar. I don't know anyone here is a great Sanskrit scholar or whatever. John, you got the degree, right? Sanskrit. Yeah. but that doesn't disqualify us for understanding. Because all we have to do is become devotees, sincere devotees. You know, and then to that degree that we are sincere, we'll appreciate this knowledge. And actually understand it better than these guys in academia. I've seen. I worked on put together this revision. I did a little bit of work, not much, but I knew what Jai Vaidyanath was doing. He had some other Gitas that he had gotten, one from academia, one verse per page. You know, the book costs $60-$70. This is what these academics do. They print a few hundred of them, and then they cost a fortune, because then their students have to buy them for class. You know, and so. But you know, you read the translation and you can see it doesn't really understand. There's no impetus to become a devotee there, you know, which is the ultimate meaning of the Bhagavad Gita. So with all of those degrees and that so-called erudition and scholarship, they still the real meaning of the Gita is covered. I personally witnessed it in that Karmi Gita. It wasn't Bhagavad Gita as it is. You know, it was Bhagavad Gita as we present it. So that's these next couple of verses are important. You know, the parampara and how it comes down and who's qualified to understand and receive Gita. Okay, text 2. Evam parampara praptam imam raja shayo vidahu sakane neha mahata yoga nashta parantapa. This supreme science was thus received through the chain of disciplic succession, and the saintly kings understood it in that way. But in course of time, the succession was broken, and therefore the science as it is appears to be lost. Purport. It is clearly stated that the Gita was especially meant for the saintly kings, because they were to execute its purpose in ruling over the citizens. Certainly, the Bhagavad Gita was never meant for the demonic persons, who would dissipate its value for no one's benefit, and would devise all types of interpretations according to personal whims. As soon as the original purpose was scattered by the motives of the unscrupulous commentators, there arose the need to re-establish a disciplic succession. 5,000 years ago, it was detected by the Lord himself that the disciplic succession was broken, and therefore he declared that the purpose of the Gita appeared to be lost. In the same way, at the present moment also, there are so many editions of the Gita, especially in English, but almost all of them are not according to authorized disciplic succession. There are innumerable interpretations rendered by different mundane scholars, but almost all of them do not accept the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, although they make a good business on the words of Sri Krishna. This spirit is demonic, because demons do not believe in God, but simply enjoy the property of the Supreme. Since there is a great need of an edition of the Gita in English, as it is received by the parampara or disciplic succession system, an attempt is made herewith to fulfill this great want. The Bhagavad Gita, accepted as it is a great boon to humanity. But if it is accepted as a treatise of philosophical speculations, it is simply a waste of time. This is a very important verse. In fact, the first 11 verses here can be memorized for those who are into memorizing it. It's a very important section of the Bhagavad Gita, describing the history and Krishna's birth, and three reasons why people don't surrender to Krishna in text 10. So here Krishna he introduces this word parampara, which is a word that we use very often, the disciplic succession. This knowledge has to be handed down very carefully, just like a ripened fruit. If you have a nice ripe mango at the top of a tree and you want to get it down, well, someone may pick it and then hand it to the next person down, 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 and then it comes down intact and can be used nicely, offered to the Lord. But if you throw it down, it can get smashed and get ruined. So there's a proper way of transmitting the knowledge, and it's called the parampara. Very important concept. So the parampara, or disciplic succession, is a chain of gurus and disciples. The gurus become, the disciples, the qualified disciples become gurus in their turn due to their sincerity, purity, and knowledge of the science. And they in turn hand it on to further disciples. Now, there's also the diksha disciplic succession. There's this whole understanding of initiation and taking of vows and new name and everything. That's another aspect of being a spiritual master or guru. But the main impact or the main meaning of the word guru is teacher. And that teacher has to be qualified. You know, the qualification is the purity and the understanding of the science. So here Krishna says it's coming down. Now, he uses this word vajarshi. Vajarshi, always, when I first saw this word, I said, oh, that reminds me of the old philosopher kings of Plato. You know, he had some influence coming in from the East, from India, in his philosophy, Socrates, etc. So this idea that the kings or the leaders of society, whoever they may be, have to also be scholars. They have to know philosophy. They can't just be, you know, goons who happen to claw their way to the top of society. Then you have a society of, you know, gorillas. You know, it's no better than animal society, and that's what we have today. So the genuine rulers who can do some good for society are Rajarshi. It's a combination of two words, Raja and Rishi. Rishi means scholar. Raja means king. So the kings understood it in that way. But due to the force of time, the science as it is has become lost. So time is a destructive force, generally. As Krishna says in the 11th chapter, Carlos Miloga Chayakrit Pravinho. Chayakrit means I perform the destruction. I am time and I've come to destroy everything. This whole, all these worlds. Ultimately, everything is destroyed. It all reverts back to its, you know, undifferentiated elements, you know, and there's nothing manifest at a certain point. So, that in school, we learn how there's a law of entropy. Did you ever hear about that? It means that just by sitting around, things become disorganized. Don't we experience that in our room or in our the temple? You have to constantly be cleaning and rearranging and clean to keep the neatness. Because if there's just random energy working, you know, then things get messed up. If you just let this building sit, eventually the winds, the water, you know, the rain, it just becomes a wreck, a ruin, right? There are places like that. So the same thing is true for knowledge, for this true knowledge. Because in the material world, the influence of passion and ignorance are always present. That's why it's the material world. And so, as we explained, this knowledge can be misused, it can be misinterpreted. In the Puranas, there are many different Puranas, right? We know about the Bhagavad Purana, Srimad Bhagavatam. There are also other Puranas, the Shiva Purana, the Sringa Purana, Vishnu Purana, and other Puranas for those in the lower modes of nature. There's about 18 chief Puranas. So in these other Puranas, I have been told by this, well, by our scholar Gopi Puranadana Prabhu, and you learn this also in Tattva Sandarbha, if you read, that there have been interpolations. It's like, you know, we have the Veda base, right? So the Veda base is quite a is a resource. It has the Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavatam, so many other books. Now the Veda base exists in such a way that if you know which keys to hit, you can get a Veda base that's what's called a shadow file, and you can edit that file. You can type in your own translation if you want and save it. And then start your own little parampara, you know, with your own little, you know, verse that you put in there. Or verses. And this is called Sakale Nemanda Yoga Nashtaba. This is how the yoga as it is can be lost. Therefore, Prabhupada established the Bhaktivedanta Book Trust, you know, but so that there's copyrights and the books as they are being passed down. But in times gone by, especially when everything was passed on not by books, you know, but by word of mouth. So you can imagine the danger as Kali Yuga came and unscrupulous so-called yogis, bogus yogis, you know, came around. They want to distort the message. So they may leave something out, like I mentioned, you were gone, that the whole last 12 chapters were left out in one Bhagavad Gita I saw. Because they thought that the sixth chapter was the culmination. They were into Ashtanga Yoga. They actually had, in their group, that was what they were teaching. So Krishna, Prabhupada says he detected that it had been distorted, had become distorted 5,000 years ago. So again, he's renewing the whole thing. A lot of the what the acharyas do, or what Krishna does himself, is renew or revive the message as it is. Really, that's basically their main mission, to revive it because it becomes distorted and lost. So we're living just 5,000 years after this was spoken. And we have a clear discipline of succession. It's here at the beginning of the Gita on page 32 or so at the end of the introduction. And you can see how the knowledge is... Krishna is always at the top of all the discipline of succession. So we belong to this Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya. This is the official name of it. So the beginning is always Krishna, but the knowledge came down to Brahma originally. And Brahma then taught it to his son and disciple, Narada Muni. Narada passed it on to Vyasadeva. Vyasadeva passed it on to Madhva. And Madhva passed it on to his disciples, and it came down until we get to Madhavendra Puri, who was part of the Madhva Sampradaya. And then Ishwar Puri, Lord Chaitanya, you know, he took the role of a disciple of Ishwar Puri. And then from Lord Chaitanya to his followers, the six Goswamis, and down to, you know, Jagannath Das Babaji, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Kishore Das Babaji, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Srila Prabhupada, and the present gurus. And they're meant to, you know, they're giving it as it is, this knowledge. So that's a discipline of succession. Now, at this time, 5,000 years ago, Krishna detected that there was a break, so he wanted to renew it. And so Arjun became his disciple here. Now, Arjun, of course, had already been a friend, so he was covered over a little bit so that Krishna could speak it, and we could hear it. recorded by Vyasadev and passed on to the Mahabharata. Prabhupada mentions the Mahabharata. This Bhagavad Gita is part of the larger work called the Mahabharata. And it's this, you know, perfect knowledge. And when it's transmitted by his devotee, like Srila Prabhupada, pure devotee, it becomes very potent for bringing about a revolution in the misguided world. And that's why we're hearing it. But it's good to know the history and the qualification for the hearers, and that we'll be hearing in the next verse. So any comments on the second verse here? Evam param para prapta. Yes, Bhakta Alec.
It was mentioning in the reports how this knowledge is meant for the leaders of mankind. So would you say that it's pertinent that a portion of our preaching goes towards like trying to reach out to residents?
Well, it is pertinent, and Srila Prabhupada was always very eager to speak to leaders of society. Generally, they are cordoned off. It's very hard to reach them. But yeah, whenever that's possible, generally speaking, the strategy, whereas, Prabhupada was always ready to do that, and we're ready to meet them if they're willing to, is more or less a grassroots movement, you know. Prabhupada was very eager to meet the intelligentsia, because really, we may not realize it, but the ideas that come down from the universities, you know, at various parts of the universities, think tanks are born from there, you know, that's what is governing society. And if they can be reached, if you can reach into the universities and attract people to think about these things and so forth, then there can be a real effect in society. The intelligent class of men, those who are able to understand a philosophy and transmit it, you can have a tremendous effect. You know, you can if you become influential in those circles. But we have to be patient. We learned that some years ago. I mean, when I joined, we really felt that this was a revolutionary society that in a matter of a few years, maybe a few decades, would really totally transform society and cause a revolution. I mean, that's what the book said, that's the mood that we were in, and that's the way it seemed to be working. It was expanding exponentially. But it's not so easy. It's not so easy to stay on the straight and narrow and for everyone to be focused on the mission. You know, it's the modes of nature are very powerful. So, but still, it's spreading. Still, books are going out. Still, thousands of people are being introduced to the chanting. You know, and maybe not exactly as we had thought it would happen, but it is happening. And so, you can see Krishna's hand working in this spread of this knowledge. And the wonderful thing is, you know, as Prabhupada once said, well, you know, we can't lose now. Basically, he said the books are out there. You know. So many millions, actually, of these books have been distributed. And with the internet, you know, it just goes everywhere. And people, we don't even know. I mean, sometimes you hear these stories. This wonderful, nice, you know, these Sankirtan stories are so enlivening. I don't know if you heard this one about the devotee in Russia. Now, Russia, you have to realize, you know, you may not understand, but if you look at the map, it's a huge country. It's like four times bigger than the United States or something, or three. It's just immense. And there aren't that many people there. There's only like 150 million, which is half of the United States. And so there's these huge tracts of land that are just open. And then you'll have a city here, or you'll have many towns, small towns, but there's a lot of room, you know. So this fellow somehow had received the book, not from a devotee, but from a friend who had gotten the book, you know. And so he didn't know that there was a movement. He didn't know that there were devotees. All he had was a book. I'm not sure which book he had. Maybe Bhagavad Gita. I think it may be in a different book because he read in the book the importance of spreading the knowledge, you know. And he was obviously taken with the book. So on his own account, with his own money, he printed up a few hundred copies, you know, of the book. And then he was distributing the book in some remote village or big town in Russia. And during the Christmas marathon, there was some Prabhupada marathon, and there was a traveling Sankirtan party, and one devotee met this devotee and tried to distribute a book to him. And he said, oh, I'm already distributing those books. And so naturally a conversation ensued. And he learned that this devotee had on his own, you know, was going out and distributing books on the strength of what he read in Prabhupada's books. He had no idea there was a society or other devotees. Of course, then they were able, I think, got him to a temple, you know. But you see the power of this, you know, thing when the seed falls on the fertile ground, you know. So it'll take time, you know, but inevitably it'll happen because Krishna wants it to happen and because his pure devotee, Srila Prabhupada, wants it to happen and did so much for us. All right, let's go on to text 3. Sehevayamayatebhya yoga prokta puratanaha bhaktosime sakacheti rahasyam yetaruttamam. That very ancient science of the relationship with the Supreme is today told by me to you because you are my devotee as well as my friend and can therefore understand the transcendental mystery of this science. Purport. There are two classes of men, namely the devotee and the demon. The Lord selected Arjuna as the recipient of this great science, owing to his being a devotee of the Lord. But for the demon, it is not possible to understand this great mysterious science. There are a number of editions of this great book of knowledge. Some of them have commentaries by the devotees, and some of them have commentaries by the demons. Commentation by the devotees is real, whereas that of the demons is useless. Arjuna accepts Sri Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and any commentary on the Gita following in the footsteps of Arjuna is a real devotional service to the cause of this great science. The demonic, however, do not accept Lord Krishna as he is. Instead, they concoct something about Krishna and mislead general readers from the path of Krishna consciousness, Krishna's instructions. Here is a warning about such misleading paths. One should try to follow the disciplic succession from Arjuna and thus be benefited by this great science of Srimad Bhagavad Gita. So here's a verse Prabhupada quoted all the time, especially this line, Bhaktosime Sakacheti, that what's this bhakti, you know, moves on the genuine feeling. It's not moving primarily just on intelligence. The whole thing is with the emotion. Krishna favors those who have some devotion for him, who have devotion for his devotees. He doesn't favor those with a big intelligence and big brain necessarily. And therefore, he says, this very same science, I'm speaking it, I'm renewing it now, Arjuna, to you, this ancient yoga system that I spoke to the sun god, because you're my devotee and you're my friend, and therefore you can enter into this mystery. It's a great mystery, you know. If you think about it, if you just go over some of the elements of philosophy, you see that it's very mysterious because you can't understand it by your ordinary senses. Even the existence of the soul. You know, Krishna says right in the second chapter, "Ashchayavat pashyati kashchidena," that some who, you know, see, look at the soul as amazing, they hear about it, they think it's totally amazing, you know, and they can't believe in it. Many people, they reject the idea. There's a whole school of thought, you know, that they poo-poo the idea, the ghost in the machine, the reductionists, the behaviorists, you know, who think everything is just a bunch of chemicals reacting. Their ideas, the consciousness just comes from the synapses, and if we just get, you know, they keep talking about, we're going to build this computer, you know, that's just like a human being, relax, just like a human being, you know. Nothing, therefore that means we're nothing more than complicated machines, you know. That's demonic, you know. Therefore, there's no place for the soul in that. There's no place for anything beyond the intricacies of the chemical reactions, the neurons, the electric. See that? The soul isn't there. So the very simple, you know, first lesson that we all accept. I mean, does anyone in this room not believe in the soul? You know, that's crazy, right? But how fortunate we are, you know, because those who are influential in academia, they're writing science books that the kids are reading and learning about, you know, the Darwinian evolution. And you know, the extrapolation that everything has just arisen out of this primordial soup, you know, with a lot of lightning bolts. You know, this is, You know, millions and millions of years, and then it was some, you know, little simple organism. Millions and millions of more years, and then it became a little more complicated. Millions and millions of, and gradually we came about, and that's all we are. Just chemicals reacting. People actually believe that. You know? So then when they encounter this philosophy, it doesn't make any sense to them. God, the soul, I can't see anything like that. Show me God. You know, Prabhupada would poo-poo that. You know, because he's living in the 60s, right? He's preaching in the 60s and early 70s. It's all part of the same culture. And people were dropping acid and thinking they saw something, you know? And so, oh, the divine, God, something. So now they wanted to say, you show me God, you know? And Prabhupada said, you don't have the eyes to see God. You don't have the eyes. We can't even see, the molecules and the atoms and anything, you know? And then you're going to see God, who is... By definition, adhokshaja means transcendental to the perception of the eyes and other senses, you know, beyond. So that's why this is a great mystery. The whole thing is a mystery, but for the devotees, it makes perfect sense. I mean, when you actually doesn't it make perfect sense, you know, that because you're experiencing from within, you're experiencing something from within. Yeah, I can see the modes of nature working. It makes perfect sense. There's the modes of passion. You can see them working. You just, you know, walk down a horn blend. They're still partying, big weekend, you know. Yeah, there it is. There's the mode of ignorance. They're lying on the street drunk, you know. I mean, and you can feel, you can understand them working in your own mind also. You can see it. So, and, you know, Krishna's presence, you could, you know, last night, you can feel the sweetness. You know, Krishna's smiling from the altar, kirtan's going on. You know, something is there. It's not just, some myth. And then Prabhupada would use also this argument, you know. This is a very good argument. Said, okay, to me it doesn't make any sense. I don't believe in your Krishna. So what does that mean when someone just, you know, throws it away and then goes back to their ordinary life? Well, that means that they're saying, well, you know, Lord Brahma, you know, Madhvacharya, Ramanujacharya, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, all of these towering intellects and great yogis, obviously self-restraint, highest ethical principles. There's no question that they're, you know, high souls, that they're all wrong. They're all making up a story. You know what I mean? In other words, you're discounting. It's like some kid goes to a chemistry department in physicists. What is all this, you know? It doesn't make any sense. I never saw anything like that. You know, knocks over a beacon, you know, some instrument or something. Well, who is he to know? You know what I mean? In other words, here are people who, you know, have been recognized in their field. They're obviously, high intellects and towering, and, you know. It doesn't make any sense. And that's exactly as the ordinary person who disregards this science. It's the most important thing. It's never out of date. Do you want to be free from all suffering? Take a poll. You're not going to get 100%? Say yes. Do you want to experience the highest happiness forever? You know? Well, some of you may not believe there is this thing, but if you could, everyone would say, yeah, of course. So this science is saying, well, this is a way of getting that. At least it merits in some investigation, whether it's true or not. You see what I'm saying? But you know, but it is mysterious because it's outside the realm of our ordinary experience, completely, you know, unknown to us. We've been living under the modes for millions of births. We're conditioned, you know, our senses are out of control, covering our knowledge. So someone has to reach in, you know, like they say, this intervention. You know, if someone's in the throes of like alcoholism or something, you know, and the sister or the brother or the husband or wife, you know, comes. Says, okay, come on, you're coming to the Betty Ford Clinic or whatever they had, you know. We'll take you there. No, I just one more drink. No, come on, you need an intervention, right? Somebody has to reach into your world and bring you out. Well, no one is going to drag us out, you know, physically. We have to be willing to take the first step. But the reaching in is there. Krishna is reaching in here just by speaking the Bhagavad Gita. And Prabhupada reached all the way in, you know, to New York City in the West in order to find some receptive souls who would make take the first step. So Krishna would then take 10 steps to you, Prabhupada would say. So that's what this is all about. And you have to become a friend and devotee of Krishna. Not 100% because we're so conditioned, but at least you have to try and accept, you know, Krishna as the Supreme Personality of God. At least theoretically, the prophet says in the introduction. Then you can start to understand what Bhagavad Gita is all about. If you look at it through the lens of, oh, this is an interesting cultural artifact, you know, this is somebody wrote this back in, you know, the 16th century or something. In other words, if you look through the academia at this book, then it can't reach into your heart, you know. I mean, how many guys study this now in college? I mean, not this Bhagavad Gita as it is, which is so potent, but Bhagavad Gita is part of Eastern studies, you know. They're not joining the ashram. They don't come to the conclusion, you know, Sarva Dharma Paricharya. That's just one of many ideas. Now let's study Buddhism. Now let's study, you know. It's not Bhaktosime Sakacheti. Any questions on this? How to understand the Gita? Got to be a devotee. Okay, now, yes, Prabhu.
It's kind of funny that the, you know, the scientists will say, we won't believe in Krishna because, you know, show me Krishna. Okay, well, why don't you show me the missing link? Why don't you show me the primeval organisms? Why don't you show me all the atoms that you say are God's rules made up or any of the stuff?
We're getting there. We'll show you tomorrow. All glory to Srila Prabhupada.